This episode is brought to you by Neo Books and Coffee. Neo Books and Coffee is an independent bookshop and coffee bar housing a wide collection of both English and Arabic books, and a coffee bar that serves and sells the finest quality coffee beans and exquisite teas. Hi there, this is Wafa Labedat. You're listening to the Woman Power Podcast, a subsidiary platform to the Woman Power Summit, the largest event in MENA, with the aim of empowering women and helping them achieve their absolute highest potential. Each week on the Woman Power Podcast, you will hear honest, vulnerable, authentic, real conversations from inspiring women. These women will share their experiences and stories into what it takes to build a successful business and career. The podcast will share insight and inspiration and hopefully inspire action and lead change. Rawan Zahran is a fitness trainer and the founder of fitness center Sweat Army. After 8 years of private personal training and boot camps, Rawan has taken her boot camp experience to the next level by launching a space for her and her clients where they can work out and feel good about themselves. Welcome, Rawan. So, Rawan, I'm so excited to have you here. I've been following you for some time now. I love your work. I wanted to first ask you, I know things are normalizing now, but how has COVID been for you since March?
Well, it's been a very interesting experience. You know, to be honest, before it started, I've reached a point where I was very exhausted. You know, when you're working, our type of work, it's just never ending. And I go to the gym, I train people all day long, mornings and nights. And at some point, I felt like I just needed a, you know, just to slow down a little bit. I wanted not a break. I love what I do. But I just wanted to, you know, just like pace myself, like take a step back and breathe. And I needed that, you know, that break, but not a full break. It just slowed down, if I can express it in that way. So I was just thinking about that, oh, I need to slow down. I need to, you know, refocus. I need to work on myself, and I need to, you know, work on new programs. And I was just thinking that thought. And a few days later, that announcement came out that gyms have to close down. And I was like, whoa, I wanted a break, but I didn't want to close down. You know, when I realized what I was thinking, I was like, we started panicking as a gym that this is our life, this is our job. We had employees, we have clients who depend on us, who are committed, who show up every day. We can't just stop. And even though we always wanted to, to start our online program, we wanted to reach people outside of Saudi. We're based in Jeddah. We wanted to reach people in Riyadh. When we thought of it, we were like, this is not going to stop us. This is our chance to push our dream faster, the dream that we wanted to reach more people, not just in our city, but in people around the world. How do we do it? I think COVID just pushed us to push ourselves harder, to work harder and to get more, you know, to get things done, you know, in a way. So we took a step back, we breathed, and we thought about how can we reach people, how can we make this work? And we immediately, within a week, we switched to a virtual platform. Like we're doing now, we just turned on, we downloaded the Zoom app, created an online schedule, and told our clients, we called them our soldiers, we told our soldiers, this is not going to stop us, our workouts are still going to continue, sign up virtually, here's the passcode, here's the password, here's the link, and, you know, just everybody everybody was skeptical. They didn't know, we never trained virtually before. We as coaches never trained virtually, and people, our clients, never had this virtual experience before. So they didn't think it was going to work. They didn't think it's going to be motivating, but heck, we did it. We did it. And we continued with our classes virtually. We started having people from around the world joining our classes, people from London, people from Africa, people from America, Riyadh, Khobar, and was like the things we were dreaming of, just COVID pushed us to that. So that was the positive impact we had. So I can't complain.
You pivoted very quickly. That's awesome. I think for some people, it takes them some time to be like, what, they go to zero revenue overnight and they're like, what are we going to do? How are we going to survive? So it's so impressive that you were able to do that in a week's time. Did you see another gym do this and you were like, this is what we should do? Or did it come naturally to you to be like, virtual is the way to go?
Yeah, I've seen all the gyms doing live workouts, which we did. You know, let's start with the live workouts. We started doing live workouts on Instagram, people joining us. But then I thought, you know, live was just not enough for us because we need to see people. We need to coach them. We need to make sure they're doing the right moves. You know, with the live Instagram or YouTube, you don't get to see the people, how they're doing it. So we've heard about Zoom and I've seen one gym, I think, talk about it. And we've immediately tested it out on ourselves, the coaches. And it was perfect. I can see you, I can hear you, I can coach you. They can see us clearly, and we immediately, you know, and it was very easy to set up. It didn't take us time to do it. So the switch was scary, but it was quick. And alhamdulillah, it worked really well.
What did you do before Sweat Army? So you're an entrepreneur now, you're a trainer, you're a coach. Who was Rawan before Sweat Army?
Before Sweat Army, way back, let's take a step back. When I was in high school, you know, my dream was to become a psychologist. You know, I wanted to study psychology. I wanted to get my PhD in psychology. I wanted to become a doctor. I knew I was, you know, my whole life, I knew I was going to be in something, in a profession where I'm going to be helping people. I was positive I was going to be a psychologist. You know, that was my dream. That was my goal. I got married early. At 17, I got engaged. At 18, I was married. We traveled. My husband and I, my husband was already living in the States studying college. And then he came back. We got married. I moved to the States with him. And I was in Rhode Island. And in Rhode Island, there are a lot of, one of the top universities, there was Brown. And I knew Brown had psychology. And then there was another university which was also very good. It was, which I went to, which is called Johnson & Wales University. I don't know why, I don't know how, but I didn't even consider applying to Brown, to the psychology department. I don't know, I had second thoughts, I had fear, you know, maybe fear of rejection, maybe fear of something. I was intimidated by it. And I decided, you know what, I'm not going to pursue psychology. I want to learn business. I want to go into business management. I want to concentrate in human resource management. And that's what I did. I don't know why I switched that, although I was so sure that's what I wanted. You know, until today, I have no idea, but I think it was fate. I think I was meant to do that switch and end up here. I loved business. I loved studying business. I loved studying human resource because I love understanding human. I like understanding people and which role suits them best. And it was very interesting to study that. I graduated top of my class with honors, and it was a great college experience. I went back to Saudi and I worked as a project manager for the first project. And it was about a woman's huge facility that included the gym. It included arts and crafts. It was a big facility that everything a woman's need, from not just sports, there was a running track, basketball, tennis, you know, cubicles for people who want to start their own business. So it was like a huge project. And then as the years, you know, we were working on it for a year, but then the investments didn't come in and didn't come through. And the investors, they decided they want to just make it a smaller project, which is just sports. At the time, I was pregnant and I had to take a break from it, from being the project manager. I handed it to another manager and I gained 28 kilos in that pregnancy. I don't know, it was moving back to Saudi, or it was stress, or it was not moving at all. You know, those days, back in those days, it was 10 years ago. We still had that thought that pregnant women shouldn't move, pregnant women should be careful, don't carry this, don't go there, stay comfortable, stay on the couch. And that's what I did. I had just moved back from the States. So after I gained 28 kilos, gave birth, I was shocked. I was shocked to the amount of pounds, of kilos I still had left, because it was my second pregnancy. It was my first pregnancy. I was, I didn't gain that much, and I got back to my shape pretty, you know, within a few months. But with this one, I had 20 kilos left. You know, 8 kilos were lost with the baby, maybe 5 kilos. And I had 20 kilos, 25 kilos left to lose. And I didn't know where to start. I got into depression. you know, postpartum depression. You don't feel, you still feel yourself because, you know, like it's pregnancy and you're glowing and, you know, everything is perfect. Everybody's complimenting you. Even if you're, you know, you gained so much, even the doctors, you know, they won't tell you. But as soon as the baby is, you know, you deliver your baby, that glow just disappears, you know, all of a sudden from a glowing, beautiful, pregnant mom to a zero glow, tired, you know, you're not sleeping well, black circles around your eyes, you know, a few months and everybody, you know, you feel, maybe not, but you feel like everybody's looking at you, why is she still fat, or, you know, or you're looking at yourself and you're telling yourself, why am I still fat, although it took us 9 months to, you know, to do this baby, and then you want to just go back and bounce back in a month, which is hard and it's stressful, and I was breastfeeding, and breastfeeding was pretty hard for me because my milk production is low and I have to eat a lot to get that milk. And even though I'm eating a lot, my milk's still low, but I'm just getting fatter and my milk is still low. So, and then I get those postpartum depression and I'm depressed and I don't want to see anyone and I don't want to go out. 4 months later, I decided, you know, I'm going to stop breastfeeding. It was just too much pressure on me. And I started, you know, I wanted to fix my food a little bit. I knew I was doing something wrong because I was just gaining weight. You know, I wasn't losing and I wasn't just stable, I was gaining. So I thought, no, I'm doing something wrong. Started researching what to eat, what not to eat. And I started just cleaning up my diet. I cut sugar. I cut the processed carbs. I started a workout program. It was just out and it was Insanity. It was a Beachbody program. I started doing it. A week later, I gave up. It was too hard. So I was like, no, I can't do this. And I remember my husband kept doing it. We were doing it together. And his body changed in 2 weeks. And I was like, wait, if his body's changing, I'm going to get back into it. So I went back into it and I was doing terribly. My form was bad and I stopped a lot, but I just kept doing it. I just committed to it. And I stopped looking at the weight because every time I go on the scale, I just get depressed. So I just stopped looking at the scale. I just kept working out, eating clean, working out, eating clean, working out, eating clean, day after day, day after day, day after day. And the weight was going. And, you know, I didn't even notice. My focus just shifted from weight loss to just stress relieving. Workout has become a break for me, a stress reliever where I feel better. You know, I'm sweating off and I felt better. And then people started asking me, you know, oh, you lost so much weight. What did you do? When I heard that comment a lot, I decided to go on the scale. I weighed myself and I saw a number I've never seen in my whole life. One thing I really like to highlight is that sometimes people think of me that I've always been fit or that I was always been athletic or that I've always been, you know, I'm not. I was a couch bum when I was in high school. I barely moved. I used to force myself to move. Me and my friends used to get ourselves out of the couch, do a quick aerobic workout, swim a little bit maybe. We tried to do sports, but we were never, you know, that athletic and I was never serious. I've never sweated in my workouts before. So it's not impossible. You know, you can become athletic later in your life. You can become athletic after your 20s. I started getting into fitness seriously when I was in my 20s, after my babies, after I become a mom. So we can't say, no, I'm a mother, I don't have time. You can make time.
Neo Books and Coffee is a proud sponsor of the Woman Power Podcast. You can browse their incredible, beautifully curated book selection. Build your wish list and request out-of-stock and unlisted titles with the Neo Books and Coffee app, which is available to download on the Apple and Google Play Store. So when did you decide you wanted to become a fitness trainer? When did it go from, wow, I feel good about myself, my body's the fittest it's ever been, you stood on that scale, and then when was the decision made? You know what? I'm going to take this. Like, did you think I'm going to take this seriously as a career? Or were you like, I'm going to do this on the side? Were you still working in HR?
I wasn't at the moment. I was just working on myself. I was, you know, when I started, I kept training and training. And then when my family and friends kept asking me to train them, train us, let us come train with you. You know, they've seen me transform from, you know, that 25 kilos overweight into a very athletic, you know, slim body that they've never seen me reach before. So they've insisted on me training them, and I didn't want to take that risk without having the proper knowledge, because it was just based on my experience. I didn't have that knowledge to train people, take that responsibility. I always tell people now who come to me, who want to become trainers, that it's a huge responsibility. It's like, I don't want to say we're like doctors, but we're like, when we study to become trainers, we really study the human body a lot, because you have the same responsibility as, you know, doctors, physiotherapists, as a trainer. People might get injured. Yeah, a lot of people are going to come to you who have injuries. You got to know how to take care of those injuries. You have to be able to know what's their limits. It really is a risky, a high responsibility job, I think. That's when I decided. I still wasn't, you know, sure. I had a lot of doubts. I didn't know. My personality is very shy and I'm very quiet. I don't have that. I didn't feel like I had that coaching quality. So I just wanted to study fitness, you know, just to train my friends and family. And I got certified. 9 months later, I got certified. It was International Sports Science Association, ISSA. And I was so scared to start. I don't know why. Even with my family, with my friends, I was so scared. My husband had to push me. Friends, you know, were insisting. Taking that first step was the hardest for me. Maybe I had self-doubt. I didn't have that much of, you know, I didn't believe in myself as a coach. So I was so scared. The confidence of coaching was so scary. But I, you know, people pushed me. My friends pushed me. I started coaching my friends, only the close friends, family. And they started improving really fast. And they started, you know, reaching a better strength and better, physique. And word of mouth started traveling really fast. And I was still scared. And I didn't have except like a one square in my house where I was training. It was a really small room. It was our formal room. We got rid of our formal room. We just put it all in the exercise. We laid down some exercise mats. No equipment, nothing. And that was my studio. And that was where I started training people, training myself. To tell you, to answer your question, when did Sweat Army start? It was when I started, you know, getting overwhelmed with a lot of people who want me to train them. I decided I wanted to create a team. I wanted to grow. I wanted to train people to become my trainers, to become my team. I remember I found three clients of mine who've been working out continuously, who I've seen passion in their eyes. I know they love what they're doing. So I asked them, would you consider becoming trainers? And they said yes. So I started training them. And then we started going to Dubai, and we started taking more courses about workshops. And they became my team. They became my army. And one of our other clients called us the Sweat Army. And I decided to call my studio used to be called Sweat Gym. When I recruited those people, see, that's where the human resource part comes in. I've seen people and I know this. They might fit in this job. As I recruited them, we became the Sweat Army. And even though they're not with me now, I have totally new army. We all decided to go different ways. But they're still trainers, which is amazing. Sweat Army idea was born.
We're very proud to announce our collaboration with a brand that we strongly resonate with and are huge fans of. The Woman Power Podcast will be sponsored by Neo Books and Coffee for our upcoming season 4. Neo Books and Coffee is an independent bookshop and coffee bar housing a wide collection of both English and Arabic books, stationery, and gifts. Their coffee bar serves and sells quality teas from Tea Pigs and only the finest Arabica beans. They also have a coffee app available on both iOS and Android devices. The Woman Power Podcast is delighted to be working with our new partners and look forward to producing more meaningful content and recognizing our goals together. Watch the space for more exciting details. My question is, You said you had a bit of imposter syndrome where you were like, you know, should I be training? Am I a good trainer? Would I be, you know, how long did it take you to recover from imposter syndrome? Or do you still have imposter syndrome sometimes?
I still do sometimes. It took me maybe months to get that confidence and to believe in myself. You know, I think I realized I gained more confidence when I saw that I was able to change people, that I saw people's progress. You know, when you see, when you train people and you see them, for example, they came in as beginners, you know, zero fitness, and you see them grow with you, and you're like, oh, well, I helped them, you know, I did something good. My methods are working. So every time I see people gaining progress, getting better, it gives me more confidence that I'm doing a good job, or, you know, that I'm good at what I'm doing. And then sometimes, you know, we all, you know, even as a trainer, even with all the experience I've had and all the traveling I've done to continuously learn and to continuously gain that experience, I still have doubts. I still have block, you know what they call the writer's block? I have a trainer's block. Sometimes I say, what am I going to do next? Which, you know, I like to keep them on a program. And it's just block, especially if you're working with people who've become so fit. And that's what I have now. I have a few clients, Wafa, they're so fit that I don't know how to challenge them anymore. And I get that block. And then I don't know why, I don't know how, maybe all the experiences I've had, all the workshops come again together, and I start writing a new program and I go give it to them and they love it. And then it's challenging them more. But, you know, you just have to continuously believe in yourself, continuously know that, yeah, just fight that self-doubt. We need to always fight that self-doubt, but it's always going to come up. It's always going to show up. Dealing with it is the main thing, I guess.
So then Sweat Army was born. The name resonated with you. What did you do next to create the space? Did you start looking for spaces that would suit your vision? Did you, you know, create a logo? Did you take out a loan? Like, what did you start doing to materialize your vision or to manifest your vision?
I mentioned before, I started training people in my studio in the house, and it was just a small hall room. And, you know, I don't know how to tell you this, Wafa, but year after year, you know, when you have a vision, I've learned exactly what I'm lacking in this room that I've been training people at. I know year after year, I had the vision. I imagined, what if I had this space here? What if I had this, you know, this equipment here? I kept visualizing what I was missing and what I wanted. So 4 years, this vision kept building up in my head, imagining the studio, imagining the space, imagining what equipment I would put if I had the space. 6 years dreaming, creating, imagining. And then I remember when I was in New York, one of the years I went to New York for a seminar, I met a trainer and I went to his studio. I don't know why the name escapes me right now. It was years ago. I went to his studio and it was amazing how he utilized his space. He didn't have that big of a space, but he utilized it very well. He had all the equipments I wanted. So he helped me in designing Sweat Army. I told him exactly what I wanted, what equipment I needed. I didn't wanna, our whole methods of training, I like to use our bodies more than any machine. I feel like our bodies are, can do wonders. I mean, even in our virtual classes, we train people even if they didn't have any equipment. So I didn't want to pack my gym with a lot of equipment. I wanted just a treadmill, a rower, things that are functional. And the rest was just a lot of big spaces to use free weights. And I just imagined it and he helped me out. And it was a great, I remember my father-in-law and my mother-in-law saw me grow in my studio, saw my success, heard about me from other people. I remember when I started becoming a trainer, it was something new. There weren't a lot of Saudi trainers. There was just another one I knew. And most of the trainers were non-Saudi. There were foreigners. So I remember even my mom was like, you're going to work as a trainer your whole life? I mean, don't you want to do something in business? Don't you want to... You know, she didn't really get it. And I remember years later, she started hearing about me from her friends. Oh, your daughter is the trainer. And then I felt like she started understanding that this is just, it's not a side job for me anymore. And she realized that, her daughter is building a reputation, her daughter is changing some people's lives. And it was, I think it resonated with my family, with my father-in-law, with my mother-in-law, who, remember I told you I was working on a project. My mother-in-law wanted that project, and she said, let's go back and do that project in a smaller scale. Just your concept, build it up and I'll invest. So they were the investors. They had the belief, they believed in me. They believed in what I was capable of. They saw my journey. And it took me 2 years to get the big studio up and ready. And there were a lot of pauses. There were a lot of, ups and downs. Things, you know, in Saudi, I don't know if it's the same thing and elsewhere, but construction sometimes takes time and then they don't get the thing right. And then, you know, a little bit of delays from here, delays from there. And I remember we opened in a time where Saudi was in an economic crisis. So we had such a slow start. I remember, and I remember, you know that doubt I was talking about? I had that doubt again. What if I wasn't supposed to, you know, expand? Maybe I shouldn't have done this. Maybe I'm going to fail. You know, all these doubts come back because we just put a huge amount of investment in a huge space. What if I wasn't who they think I am? What if I'm going to fail? What if, you know, all that doubt started coming in? And I remember it was going so slow. My clients who used to come to my house weren't coming. Maybe because I forgot to mention that I got into depression again. You know, not depression. I don't want to say a big word, but I was, I took a break from training. I felt like I needed, it was too fast and I was too exhausted. I was overtraining. I was going into strict dieting, which is very bad. So overtraining with strict dieting gets a toll on your body. And all of these things I've learned through my journey, and I always try to teach people about it, and I always try to post about it on my Instagram, is not to fall in the trap of overtraining. Because the more stress you put on your body, the more your body starts shutting down and you get mentally exhausted.
I know exactly what you mean, Rawan. Recently, I joined F45 here in Bahrain and I was going 6 days a week. And, you know, F45 is really intense. You are moving very quickly between workouts and you are carrying to talk to experts to tell us, you know, how are we doing? You know, is this the right program? How is our progress? How is the relationship between food and working out? So they're so intertwined and a lot of facilities don't offer nutrition support. A lot of nutritionists don't talk about, you know, so they work in isolation.
They feel like they're separate, although it's all, you know, they all complement each other. People, trainers, professionals, we don't used to talk about this downs a lot because, you know, we think we always want to motivate people. We don't want to talk about the, although it's very important. And at that time, now I'm remembering, I was working on this new project, the Sweat Army Gym project, the bigger project, and it required a lot of work from me. So I was stressed and I was training and I was overtraining and I was extreme dieting and then binge eating because, you know, I was stressed. And I had to realize that I need to stop training people for a while and focus on this project, get the gym ready. And I feel like in that amount of time that I've lost, when I opened Sweat Army, I felt like I've lost my people because I stopped training for a while and maybe they went to other people or, you know, I don't know what happened. So all that self-doubt came again and it was low economy and I felt like I was going to fail. But that, you know, getting over these fears and getting over these self-doubts and you just keep working hard, keep showing up, trying to find the right people for you, you know, never giving up, I think is what is the major thing that I would, you know, like to say to people, even if you open a business and it's going so slow, not as you expected, don't give up. Don't give up on yourself. Don't give up on your ideas. Don't give up on your vision. We had some rough years. We opened in a low economic time. A year later, a lot of problems were happening in Saudi. And our second year when we wanted to plan our huge anniversary, COVID happened. So, you know, year after year, something happens that, you know, just changes our plan. We kept being positive, just fought all the circumstances and we're still here.
So what are some of the mistakes you feel you made as an entrepreneur that you're like, okay, when I say mistake or failure, I don't mean it in a bad way, as in there was a gift in there for you as well. Like you learned something either about yourself or about the business.
I think one of the mistakes is taking my time. You know, we could have opened a lot sooner. We could have, you know, I did, as an entrepreneur, I think I procrastinate a lot. I miss a lot of opportunities, sometimes because of fear. You know, fear of failure, fear of not being ready, fear of, oh, it's not the right time. I think that's the major thing. Don't ever delay. You know, if you're ready, just do it. Don't have that fears and it's not the right time. It's never the right time. You know, now I realize it's never the right time. Just do it. Just do it. You know, I remember we were one of the first, I was one of the first trainers who were Saudi, and we had one of the first ideas. When I decided to open Sweat Army, 3 or 4 other gyms opened at the same time. We're so late in the game, although we could have been much earlier. And we could, but you know, again, everything happens for a reason. But you know, I just really do feel like we had a lot of, I had a lot of missed opportunities as a person because of fear. So that's the main issue.
That's so interesting.
So that's the main issue.
What an awesome. Yeah. I feel like there's this amazing book called The Lean Startup Model, which talks about the importance of starting and then adapting. As like the sooner you launch, the sooner you can adapt and pivot and change based on customer versus taking a lot of time and money to build something, launching it, and then realizing, wow, I need to make all these changes to suit the customer. And there's this also amazing podcast I just listened to by Y Startup Combinator that talks about the importance of launching and launching and launching. Like you never stop launching. You launch and then you change and then, you know, maybe your trainers change and then you relaunch and then you introduce a new program and then you launch that and you change it. So it's, you never stop, adapt and make changes as you go along. You know what I mean?
Exactly. You know, you said it. You know, we used to have a fear of change. You know, if I do this, I can't change it. No, you can change it. You know, you start something and it didn't turn out the way you wanted it, or you had an extra idea, change it. You know, we live in a flexible time now, where changing something or adapting something is much easier than before. You know, exactly like what happened with COVID. We were not used to training people online. We were not used to doing virtual classes. We had to adapt, and we had to adapt quickly. And we had that fear of adapting. We had a quick time pressured decision we need to do as a gym. And as
what is so you talked about, like, the one thing you wish you did better was not procrastinate. What did you feel you did really well? Like, actually, I'm very proud of myself that I, you know, did this thing, you know, as I was starting my business. Did you, for example, save?
You know, that's another thing I'm really bad at, is saving. You know, I advise people to start saving. I was telling this to my daughter the other day. My eldest is 14. We started giving her allowances, and I was telling her, you know what, save something, because we live in hard times and you never know when you're going to need it. And I was telling her, if I would have saved when I started working, I would have been, you know, I would have had a lot of good amount of savings right now. But I don't save, you know, one summer and I spend all my money. So as a businesswoman or as an entrepreneur, you know, saving, I just started saving 3 years ago, and it really changed my life. I feel like I can invest in things I'm interested in. I think I can do more stuff. I can feel, you know, I feel more independent. I feel secure. So yeah, definitely that's another thing I was bad at.
Rawan, when I was younger in school, so there's no business, like no one in my family is a business owner or an entrepreneur. They all worked in organizations. So, you know, they had salaries. So the style, or not the style, like what I learned about money is you make it, you spend it. Like you get it, you spend it. Yeah. So when I was younger, every time we would get like an idea, we would go and spend it. Like we'd go to the toy shop after and just buy everything up to the limit. Like we wouldn't leave with cash. Like we would spend it. If we got some money, we would go to the barada or the cold store. I don't know what you guys call it in Saudi. We would just buy like candy and sweets up to the amount. But you know what's crazy? That the daughters or the kids of the business owners would save all their money. So they take their idea, go to the bank with their parents and put it in. And what's amazing is now, like when I look at my colleagues from school, they have money working for them. They have funds. They have money in banks with interest rate applied. So they make money from their money. And you know, it's so hard to rewire your relationship with money because we inherit so many things and from our maybe parents, our friends, and we don't. It's not like no one teaches us money management, like how to manage our personal finance. Like they teach you like math and English, but like, what am I supposed to do with money? How do you make it? How do you keep it? How do you get it to work for you? So it's just so interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, I wish they taught us money management. We would have been billionaires by now.
One of the things I did as an entrepreneur, because I was, you know, I started my business with zero funds, is I paid myself last. Like I paid myself after 3 years, which made me very resentful, by the way. But, you know, were you able to pay yourself from day one? Or did you feel like, okay, when I hit some targets, I'll start paying myself?
Yeah, we at first, that's what we did. You know, when we hit our target, we start, you know, giving ourselves salary. It was strange coming up with, you know, the right equation for us. Also, we struggled, you know, should we do it on a commission base? Should we do it on that base? But, you know, even as trainers, we need motivation to come up and do what we want to do. So having commission-based salaries when we first started, and I was telling you we had a slow start, it's like we were going to end up with nothing. So we had to adjust and, you know, we had a fixed salary. But that's also gave us a responsibility to work harder because I don't want to get a salary and I don't have any clients or not doing anything. So this just kept us motivated and it worked and we started... Alhamdulillah, things getting better, our reputation, people were hearing about us, and we were covering our costs. At the first month, we were at least covering our salaries. It was a slow start, but we got there, and it was, alhamdulillah, it worked well.
That's really important. I think, especially as a business owner, or as business owners, like, you want to make sure everybody's taken care of, right? Like you need to pay your cleaners, your coaches, your admin, your accountant. So sometimes we leave ourselves last, and there's so much literature about this. Some people say pay yourself first, because if you burn out or if you're demotivated, it affects everyone. And some books say leaders get, you know, eat last. They're like you're the host of a dinner party. You're not going to eat. You're going to like serve everyone. And then you're the last one to sit down and have a meal. So it's interesting when you think about, you know, rewarding yourself. But
that's what happened with COVID, when we were worried about not being able to pay our employees. Agreed that, you know, I wasn't going to get paid, you know, pay me last. Let's cover our employees. Let's make sure. Thank God we had enough, you know, money saved from previous memberships that we could cover our employees. But I was very worried. I didn't want to not be able to pay them, or I didn't want to cut their salaries in half. It was one of our biggest stressful moments, I guess, not being able to pay our employees. So you're right. That was one of the things, you know, as owners or as other leaders, we don't worry about ourselves at the beginning. You know, just worry about our people and then take care of ourselves later.
Don't you feel like as moms, you're always putting everyone before you? Like even at home, it's like family first, the kids first. And then at work, it's like your team first. So it's, we're such selfless human beings, if I can say that. Yeah. I want to talk about your clients. So I have a friend who is so beautiful, and recently I got her into F45, and now I stopped going and she's going, and she's this beautiful person, but she has very like low self-esteem. So she's always like, I can't see results. I don't feel good. I haven't lost weight. You know, I don't see a difference, like always putting herself down. And I always feel like trainers and coaches sometimes are therapists. Like they have to be like, believe in yourself. And sometimes I feel like, you know, it's like our version of the barman. You know, in movies when people go to a bar and they talk to the barman as if they're their friend, they talk about their problems. But I feel like coaches and trainers also inherit the problems of their clients. They talk about like troubles they're having at home, stress from the kids, maybe they're having a bad day. Do you feel that part of your role as well is to support women about things that are not necessarily physical related? Like you're there talking about their self-esteem, their confidence, you're reassuring them, you're hand-holding them, you're being their friend?
Absolutely. Remember I told you I wanted to be a psychologist? Turns out I'm a psychologist. I don't know. I mean, really, fitness trainers become so close to our clients, and they're and part of our job is really to make them feel better mentally and physically. And it is, you know, we try to boost your confidence, and we try to listen, because yeah, we do get a lot of people who don't feel good about themselves, body image problems, self-doubt. They feel like they can't do this, it's too hard, and I always tell them, you know, I've been there. I've been through emotional eating. I've been through binge eating. I've been through, you know, gaining weight, not being able to lose. So I always tell them, you know, and I always try to share my experiences and what I've learned is to never, don't self-loathe and don't, you know, self-hate. I don't know, we've heard this a lot, is love yourself, love your body. Because, you know, when you love yourself and when you love your body and when you don't put yourself down, I don't know, there's something about your body that responds better. Better than, oh, I'm angry, I don't like this, I hate myself, I hate my body, I hate Madre. It just feels worse, and the stress becomes worse, and, you know, the hormones become worse. But accepting it, try eating better food because you love yourself, not because you hate yourself. Eating better because you love your body, you want to treat it better. And I always try to do challenges, and not strict challenges or hard challenges, challenges to build healthy habits. For example, we have a 90-day challenge that we started in October, which is we're taking it very slow. We eliminate, so they're only focusing on sugar. They're eating everything they like, carbs, bread, whatever. They're just eliminating sugar. And then slowly they eliminate something new. Building habits like meditation, you know, meditating, taking care of yourself. We give them a calendar. Some days on the calendar is just go love yourself, go get a massage, go get a hair treatment, go get a pedicure, a manicure, you know, remember yourself, because it's really important to, as you said, we never think of ourselves. It's jobs, it's our kids, it's our family, it's our husband, it's our, you know, we always put ourselves last, and sometimes we forget to take care of ourselves. So it's really, and it is part of our well-being. It's not just working out or physical activity. It's mental health. It's physical health. It's emotional health. It really is all together that we need to take care of. And it's a big responsibility. Ourselves, taking care of ourselves is a big responsibility that we sometimes neglect. So we try to give them these challenges that it's not just diet-based or workout-based, but also mental health-based.
What do you feel is the most common thing women do that you feel like, wow, every woman does this, is not good?
Fad diets, going into not eating anything, or going into the keto diet, you know. It works for some people, but you can't live your life on keto forever. So they go do this keto diet, and then they stop it, and then they gain. Or they go into a very low carb, high protein, and then they stop it, and then they go back and gain. So they just go into extreme dieting. Whereas if they just focus on building healthy habits, eliminating bad habits slowly, they can last more, and they can just make it a lifestyle forever. But dieting and non-dieting is just a vicious cycle where I think most women just fall into dieting, non-dieting, dieting, non-dieting.
I agree for sure. I think the hardest thing, by the way, is cutting out sugar. Like I've cut out coffee, but I was like, I can do coffee and sugar. And then I couldn't cut out sugar. I became like, you know, and my husband sometimes does this. He cuts off sugar and he's in the worst mood for days. I'm just like, why are you in a bad mood? It's like withdrawal. It's like a drug. And it's like, you know, and I judge him. And then when I try to do it, I was like, I can't do this. Like sugar isn't everything. It's so hard. So it's definitely like a much, I think, I also find that most women, it's the confidence. They've never had someone believe in them. And then it's really hard for them to just believe in themselves. You know, I think sometimes you need someone to believe you can do it. Possibly you do that for a lot of people, Rowan, which is why people love working with you. Maybe you believe that they can. and then they feel that they can as well. I want to talk a bit about mommyhood and being a mom. You said you have two children, or?
I have a 14-year-old, almost 15 now. She's turning 15 in November 30th. So I have a 15-year-old and a 10-year-old and a 1.5-year-old.
How do you balance it all? How do you juggle business? You know, doing training takes also a physical toll on you. You must be very tired at the end of every day because you have to do physical work plus, you know, they're doing the management of your organization. But what are some of your tips or strategies in juggling both roles?
You know, I want to be completely honest. It's extremely hard. It's not hard in a way that I'm here for my kids because I take a lunch break, so I come back to my kids. But what's really hard is, you know, as you said, I'm mentally, you know, I'm physically tired, but I'm also mentally tired because I do the marketing for my gym. So my mind is always thinking marketing and managing. So what I've noticed is when I come back home and I'm with my kids, trying to listen to my daughters, they're saying a story or they're saying, you know, they're asking me a question. I've realized that I don't listen. I'm not listening to them. You know, they're talking to me, but my mind is so occupied with work that I can't hear what they're saying. I've noticed myself saying, what? Can you repeat that again? What? Can you repeat that again? It really upset me and really, you know, it was making me sad that I'm not able to listen to my kids, even though I'm home with them. So I've decided that I'm going to put more effort, that when I come home, I'm going to try to switch off work, you know, put my phone aside and really try to listen to what they're trying to tell me. I want to listen to their stories. I want to be there for them, actually, not just physically and my mind is somewhere else. And I think that was the main struggle for me is being here, but also listening to what they're saying. My mind is just so... And with my son, what I started doing is I take him with me to the gym in the morning. Because I go home, I go to the gym from 8 a.m. So at first, I haven't been seeing him for the whole day. So I don't see him until 4 p.m. or 3 p.m. And it was too much not to spend time with him. So I've decided to take my son to work. So he comes with me to the gym. And there's a lot of play area with him to play with. So I take him until it's his nap time. I send him home. He takes his nap. So, you know, I'm lucky that my job allows me to be able to take my son with. So my advice for moms is to, if you can, take your kids to work. If your work environment allows you, and obviously depending on what type of job you're doing, try to take your kids with you. If they have a daycare, because I've noticed, even with my son, he's 1.5 years old, and I'm taking him with me to the gym. I'm already implementing in him, you know, the importance of being active, physical activity. He sees me squatting; he's squatting with me. You know, he's building these habits of being active and moving. And I remember when I used to work in my home as a trainer in my house, my daughters used to come down with me and they're always working out with me or they're always training with me. So we always had that bond. So even now as they're teenagers, they know that they're into sports, they love doing sports, they love working out. So very important is to be a good example for them, making time for them, listening to them, as I said. Especially if you have kids who are teenagers, even if you're spending with them 2 hours a day, make those 2 hours, you're really there with them. You're really listening to what they're saying. You're away from your phone. You're away from your work, giving them the time. So I think that's the balance I found. You know, that's what I'm trying to do.
Do you ever suffer from mom guilt?
A lot, you know. The main mom guilt I have is that they think I don't listen to them. Because it happens with my younger daughter, you know. You never listen to me. I used to tell her, no, I'm listening to you. And then she asked me something. And then, what? See, you know, you're not listening to me. And I have that guilt. And, you know, the guilt that I'm not spending enough time with them, you know, or I'm busy at work and I'm not giving them enough time. But then you remember, you know, we're doing our best. As mothers, we really are doing our best. We're trying to set a good example for them. We try to be there for them. I try to take them on trips. You know, even if I was busy the whole week, in the weekends I try to make up for it. I mean, we can't escape mom guilt, but we can do our best. We can do our best for our kids, and we can also do our best for ourselves, because we have to do what we love and we have to take care of ourselves so we can be a good mom and so we can take care of them. It's tough, but it's doable.
What do you feel is your superpower?
I think pushing people beyond their limits, you know, getting people to believe in themselves that they can do more than they think they can. I think that's my, with people, unlocking your potential.
That's it for this week. Thank you for listening to an episode of the Women Power Podcast. And thank you for downloading and streaming our podcast every week. If you love what you've heard, tag us on Instagram and follow the Women Power Podcast and Women Power Summit account for more information on our next episode. Please leave a rating review wherever you get your podcast. It really helps other women discover the show. That's it from me. See you next week.